Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 17th of October, and I'm recording at 9:47 p.m. That's British Summer Time. Now, first, a quick look at the highlights here this week. It's been another nervy week in here, although with stock markets mostly choppy in a range. We've had a few break beneath last Friday's lows, although not extend those declines by all that much. In Europe, for instance, we had some additional weakness before steadyish closes in here today, and volatility has been the byword, really, in terms of what's going on. Long-dated government bonds, we've seen a lot of slippage, particularly in the U.S. Treasuries. And in terms of metals, well, they've continued to head south for the most part. Precious metals have been weak. Gold has been clipped for another $20 in here today, currently $783. Now, the oil price rebounded a little bit from below that $60 level, but that's been quite weak here overall. Most of the commodities have been weak, although some short covering today, notably in the grains, I see. Well, you know, not notably, but it's just a little bit of short covering in those agricultural commodities. Okay, so what's going on here overall? Well, nervous. Nervous markets for the most part. And I certainly don't need to explain why investors remain nervous. They're pretty much in a state of shock. And when I talk to some of the hedge fund managers and broader fund investment managers, well, they're concerned about redemptions, so they're holding a lot of cash. And then there are some funds that aren't allowed to hold that much cash. These are long-only funds. And they're also concerned about redemptions. And when they get those redemptions, that's leading to some forced selling. We are still getting some global deleveraging. That has been hitting some of the commodities, I think, particularly hard. Because remember, that was the last fashion game. If we think back to 4Q 2007 and 1Q 2008, that's when all the commodities and commodity shares were going to go to the moon and never head south. Well, now some of those have come down an exceptionally long way and really don't look scary with accelerating uptrends, but look really overstretched on the downside. So that's interesting. In terms of overall general background, there are still credit crisis uncertainties. Bit of good news in here this week, though. We've had that TED spread coming down every day. Remember, I've often mentioned, I think that's probably the most important chart to keep an eye on in this environment. And I've been saying that, I think, from the 2nd of October, and I should have picked up on it earlier, because the TED spread really exploded upwards when the Lehman Brothers bankruptcy occurred. And if we think back on that, that was kind of a seminal point for the markets. Because prior to that, we'd had the Bear Stearns rescue. Well, problems were bad enough in terms of the whole derivatives crisis and the financial weakness of the banks, the over-gearing, the over-leverage. But we had the Bear Stearns rescue, and then we had the AIG rescue, and people said, well, we see a trend here. And then, of course, the U.S. let Lehman Brothers go, biggest bankruptcy in history. Now, I don't know whether that was Paulson's blunder or whether it was due to a economically clueless White House, but the global shock was just incredible. And easy to understand, because you'd had funds putting money, sovereign wealth funds, putting money into those institutions, and suddenly Lehman was gone, and the U.S. appeared to have changed its policy. Confidence wasn't that high earlier on, because you'd had the Treasury and others cheerleading for Fannie Mae and Freddie Mae, encouraging people to buy in and hang in there, and then suddenly the shareholders were done in by that. So a lot of uncertainty, but the Lehman Brothers was the big nasty surprise in terms of letting that firm go under. And so we had the TED spread and other similar indicators just take off on the upside. The system really froze. And that's with tragic consequences because trillions more were wiped off stock markets around the world. It was another nasty wrench on the downside in terms of the global economic slowdown slash recession. And, many more, countless more people laid off in jobs. So the economic damage as a consequence of that, I think were real. But to get back to that little bit of good news here, the TED spread peaked. I think it was up around 4.406 basis points, I should say. Was at 460 basis points, I think, on the TED spread. And that started to come down. It's back under four. We've got a bigger reaction. I'll be posting that chart shortly. You'll be able to see it. Unquestionably, we've seen the top, but it does need to come back a long way. We really need to see this back under one to have a healthy environment. And by the time that happens, I would expect the next global bull market in equities to be underway. But until that comes well down from its current level, there are ongoing risks here for stock markets because I mentioned the deleveraging that's taken place. There is a certain amount of capitulation selling going on. I think this is a tragic time for the capitulation selling to actually take place. And I think most investors, if they are rational about it, will actually agree with that. But emotionally, I can see people feel anguished about positions that they have ridden down, and they're frightened. And so it may seem cathartic just to let the thing go, even if they buy the same thing back later on. Remember, people did that after the '87 crash. But I would not go for the capitulation trade. Of course, I wish I'd sold at the beginning of the year or late last or sometime last year, depending on which the instrument was or is. But at this stage, no way, because we're into the end game, and what we see here is the coordinated central bank action that I had long said would be necessary. That would be a very, very important step, and we've begun that process. Now, I'm not about to say that the central banks have crossed that Rubicon completely, because it's a very wide Rubicon, but we can say that the motley armada of policies in terms of changes in monetary policy have launched themselves into this very wide river and are on their way. In other words, I expect more interest rate cuts, and I expect more bailouts, more infusions of liquidity, because once they've set course on this track, they will continue doing this. They're crisis oriented. They're reactionary rather than proactive, as I've often mentioned over the years. But they're scared, and rightly so, because the situation is serious, and they are moving. Now, for poor beleaguered investors who suffered these traumatic downward moves, and anybody who's had long positions knows what that's all about. This armada crossing the Rubicon image, it may feel more like the Dunkirk rescue from World War II. People are still dodging shells. here in stock markets, and that may go on for a little longer. But guess what? Warren Buffett is buying for his personal account, not just for Berkshire Hathaway. I think that's a very positive sign. Slightly reminiscent when President Nixon, remember him? I can remember him saying shortly before he was forced to resign that if I had some money, I'd be buying equities. Now, that didn't mark the bottom of the stock market. He was out of office before the bottom of the stock market, but it came a few months beforehand, and it was one of those signs that really governments are becoming very concerned. We know governments are very concerned. Warren Buffett is not the government, but he has about as much street cred as any investor possibly could. And his point is that while you may feel comfortable with cash, that cash is a lousy investment at this time because the policies that are being used, deployed by central banks will ultimately be inflationary. How inflationary they are remains to be seen. I don't think, for instance, that they will leave all that money on the table 2 years into the next recovery, as we saw back in the 2003, 2004 period. But we're a long way from that situation here right now. My main theme in terms of these global stock markets is that central banks are at long last taking the right steps. That TED spread is coming down. Watch that indicator and many others. The quicker it comes down, the better it will be for equity markets, I suspect, in terms of indicating that we have reached sustainable floors. And the slower, if it's delayed, if it's a much slower decline, then certainly there are some short-term ongoing risks. Now, I've also been talking to some fund management groups in here today. I've been talking to the Atlantis people, and as you know, some of you are interested to have a position in that Atlantis China Fortune Fund. Well, depending on when you get it got in, we did terribly well on the way up. Yang Liu, the manager, played the China bull market brilliantly. The trouble is, she kept on with the same policies during the bear trend, and that really was naive. But heavens, I was naive not to have sold out of my long position in there. So I wouldn't apportion too much blame there. But she could have had a more defensive portfolio, obviously. But what's interesting is that Yang Liu still has a big personal stake in that fund. Remember, I spoke to her earlier in the year, and she said that she had just put $2 million of her own money into the fund. Well, that investment, albeit reduced, is still in the fund. She has the incentive to sort it out. They have suspended the quote and put a strict limit on redemptions, and I agree with that under the circumstances. The reason they've done that is because they have some of those pre-IPO positions. I think they still have five pre-IPO positions. Now, these were companies that were going to be floated. Yang Liu, say, did incredibly well by buying those on the way up because she was buying them pre-IPO prices, and then they then soared. As they were launched, and she was expecting these to be launched, but China's extended bear run has shelved that for the time being, and consequently, those issues are very difficult to value because there isn't a liquid market for them. So I really said, well, I would favor that they stopped redemptions for a longer period because I think China will bottom out. I suspect Yang Liu's learned a lot from this experience, haven't we all? And that she will have both financial and reasons of pride to perform well on the upside, and I will wait for that. Would I put more money in the fund? I don't think so. But I will certainly be holding my position. I also talked to people from the JP Morgan Fleming Indian Trust, because what was with this issue that we've received papers on, and why were they actually doing this? And I think it's to generate interest. They created a some of the offering is creates a warrant effect, although they're not warrants, as in a traded separate warrant. They call them subscription shares. We don't have to lay out any money at this stage, but if the fund is recovering, we will have, as I would expect in the next few years, then we'll have some good opportunities with those positions. And I think undoubtedly it's an effort to keep investors in the fund. Well, I wasn't going to sell it anyway, but even if I had been thinking about selling out down here, the subscription share possibility would certainly influence me to stay in the JII fund, which I definitely intend to do. Now, so my position overall, and I had a question from another investor saying, "Well, have you sold any of your long-term positions in here?" And those recent emails that I've been dealing with had raised that concern in his mind. Absolutely not. If I buy or sell something, you hear about it pretty well immediately, and I'll even try to, indicate some of that in advance if I know what I'm going to do, and I do in this case. I'm not going to sell any of those unleveraged long-term investment positions in my personal portfolio. I think it would be silly to do it. It would have been very clever to have done it last year. It would be silly to do it in here now. Now, one of the reasons why I held on to them is because I have a lot of cash. I kept maintained a lot of cash throughout the last rise, and I don't like to have all of my eggs in one basket. This is my own strategy, which suits my temperament. It's maybe not for you, or maybe it is. But people have their own investment plans, and so they should. My investment plan was always to hold a lot of cash, not to trade my investment positions. I did want to be out before before a bear market, and well, I missed that one. I blew it. But at this stage, I'm not going to lose further sleep over that, except that I've been concerned about investor subscriber anguish in this. But I think we need to look ahead here. And Warren Buffett, I mentioned, is in here buying for his personal account. Well, I'm not quite ready to deploy that cash. But I certainly intend to at some stage in the next few months. I'm content to let it clock up interest earnings at this stage, and I want to see a little bit more evidence that we have or are near sustainable floors. And I'm also slightly concerned about the amount of ranging support building that may actually take place. I do feel that fuller money themes have a bullish future in here, and that's not loyalty that's saying that, or the fact that they're in my portfolio. The fact that they're in my portfolio would not cause me to increase those positions in the next turn up. If I didn't think that they were going to be among the leaders. So I have my hunches about what will be the leaders, and I'd be very surprised if, for instance, China and India aren't among them, and Vietnam, the commodity sector may be further delayed, but we'll see. And the charts will show me whether my hunches are correct or wrong, or if there are other, maybe other candidates emerge. So, creatively and analytically, this is an interesting time. I feel that I need to move on in terms of the shock and awe and anguish of the big sell-off that's taken place, and I need to be calm. Sometimes people take my, we Owen and I try to present calmly in these audios. One of the reasons for that is that, right or wrong, it helps one to think more rationally. Whereas I've mentioned before that sometimes, when we're saying, "Well, I know this is going to happen," or "I know that's going to happen," and people say to me, "Well, I know the UK or the US is going into a depression," really? Well, how do you know that? You fear it, as is what you're saying, or you think that may happen, but it's an opinion, it's not a fact. And so, again, the more emotional we allow ourselves to become, the less analytical we're being, and it's very easy to think that we're being analytical when actually we're being emotional. So that's why we try to stay calm and on a pretty much even keel in these in these audios. I think most subscribers appreciate that, but some also think that, well, we're at times people have said, "Well, are you a bit complacent here, or you don't get it, or whatever," because we're not jumping up and down like Kramer on CNBC. Well, good for him. It's not my style. And I'm not in the entertainment game here either. Just trying to keep an eye on these markets and see that Fuller Money makes its share of good calls in this business. That's always been our objective. And will remain so. Other markets here, looking at the long-dated government bonds, those U.S. bond long bond prices have been weakening. That obviously indicates that some people are getting out. Why? Well, maybe it's some foreign sovereign wealth funds or foreign governments, because they'd had a big gain in the bond and a big gain in the dollar. That wouldn't surprise me at all. Also, other people are saying, "Wait a minute, the price of this bailout is going to be inflationary over the long term." Buffett saying that in the article that I'll be posting. So that is a dose that long bond market is a dangerous area here overall, in my view. I've said that before, but I've said that if stock markets were hurtling south, then people would flee into those bond markets. But the moment anybody who started to think about a bottom, then they would start to steady. I beg your pardon. The bonds would start to bond prices would start to weaken. Bond yields would steady. So, what else? The U.S. dollar. I think that combination of deleveraging, creating a shortage. Well, then you go back. Let's go back to the beginning. Support intervention to push up the dollar, send it up out of its trading range, leading to short covering, then leading to long trades, momentum plays, the deleveraging, creating a temporary shortage of US dollars. But the US is pumping a whole lot of dollars back into the system now. So I think we're in a different phase here of this dollar recovery, which will go on against some currencies, but is losing momentum against some other currencies. And I think the long-term outlook for the dollar is highly suspect. But we do not have a dollar crisis. That's the obvious point here right now. We don't have a bond price crisis either, in terms of government debt, although yields are edging up a bit now, but from very, very low levels. We certainly don't have a commodity crisis here right now. Crude oil's more than halved, Now, don't you just think that is a little bit more evidence to support our contention that speculation attributed for the last big move on the upside? I'm talking about sort of from about 90, certainly $100 up to nearly 150. I think it's purely speculative, and it's came down again even faster than it went up, as those positions are being have been unwound. Big shakeouts in the commodity markets. This sets up the emerging market countries such as India for their inventory spend when global GDP growth starts to pick up once again. Whereas, really, if the commodities had continued to move higher, people were saying quite rightly that there was a danger that they'd price themselves out of the market. So, weaker commodities, particularly weaker industrial metals, say, well, that's negative for the miners. And of course it is, but that's certainly more than reflected in the prices that we see in the miners, which look attractive to me, down at these levels. And metal prices will pick up again as global infrastructure spend gets underway and the global economy picks up. So there's a back to the future element of to all this, as I've mentioned before. Meanwhile, the bad news, of course, is that the leading miners have seen their share prices come way down. But that's also very good news for those of you who were thinking of acquiring some of these shares because you missed the earlier run-up. I would not be at all surprised if I don't buy more in the leading mining shares or the BlackRock fund. So that certainly interests me. I'm content to continue to watch at this current stage because I don't feel I have to rush in. But if people want to be nibbling and cherry picking on weekdays in here, I think they can justify doing so, or we can wait for basis. Buffett says by the time the news is good again, markets will be at least 30% off their lows, and he's probably right. But there's also somewhere in between. We can I personally prefer to watch and wait a little bit longer. And meanwhile, also with those leading miners, they are in a very good position to hoover up some good ore properties that are currently owned by lesser firms that now can't get the financing to develop them. So I maintain that the big boys, and this applies not just to miners, will come out of this stronger than they were before. And that may well apply to some of the top flight agricultural companies. I missed potash last time around. We commented on it on plenty of occasions, but I didn't want to sell any of my other positions at that time to buy it, although it would have worked. But now that that's been hammered down, it's become interesting again, as I say, back to the future. And for me, it's back to work on completing my comment of the day. It's been another sort of hectic, volatile, somewhat stressful week. So let's all have a good rest over the weekend, and see what next week brings. Meanwhile, all the very best to all of you.